Today's broadcast was originally recorded on July 7th, 2025.
We knew there was going to be a problem. Why weren't these camps evacuated?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Well, you're the judge. I mean, you're the top official here in this county. Why can't you answer that? There are kids missing. These camps were in harm's way. We knew this flood was coming.
We didn't know this flood was coming. Rest assured, no one knew this kind of flood was coming.
Well, a lot of us kind of knew this kind of flood was coming.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing planet Earth from deep inside Trump's fascist America. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. I hope that most of you were able somehow to at least enjoy some downtime over the holiday weekend. We are back today after some time off ourselves with, unfortunately, breaking news from over the weekend that has, excuse me, somewhat changed our main focus from what we thought we would be focusing mostly on today. We thought we'd be largely focused on Donald Trump and the Republicans' passage of a brutal budget bill signed on the 4th of July that will gut over $1 trillion in health care coverage and food assistance for tens of millions of Americans, drive healthcare costs way up for tens of millions of other Americans, turn the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, or ICE, into a literal army, literally larger than some countries' entire militaries, including Russia's, and larger even than the U.S. Marine Corps, by the way. That's what we're going to see from ICE in the years ahead. It will also spike the national debt by more than $3 trillion, for those of you who care about such things, or for at least those of you who pretend to care about such things, all in service of giving some $4 trillion worth of tax cuts largely to the wealthiest Americans who need it the least. If your household wealth is in the top 20% or so of Americans, well, you will be much better off thanks to this bill, financially, at least when it comes to the taxes you pay. If you, like me, or everybody else, well, things are about to get a lot worse in the months and years ahead in America, which is now anything but great again. Maryland Congressman and constitutional scholar Jamie Raskin helped sum it up nicely, what I had hoped to focus on today, but he summed it up nicely during a debate last week of final passage of this bill in the U.S. House.
Mr. Speaker, I found the preamble to this big, ugly bill. We, the billionaires and our king, in order to deform and sicken our union, establish injustice, ensure domestic servility, weaken our people's defenses, undermine the general welfare, and reserve to ourselves and our posterity staggering debt servitude for eternity, do hereby instruct the Republicans in Congress to strip 17 million people of their health care, increase co-pays, deductibles, and premiums for everyone else, cut 42 million people off of nutritional assistance, increase the national debt by $4 trillion, trash renewable energy systems, increase our electric bills for the carbon kings, all to weaken and destroy the Constitution of the people of these United States of America. Please include this preamble in the legislative record. I yield back.
Yeah, that kind of sums it up. That's pretty much exactly it. And so when all of those cuts and changes start affecting you, please don't call into the show and say we had no idea, kind of what we have heard from folks out of Texas over the past few days. We'll get to that in a bit. But some of our coverage of that will necessarily get bumped down, some of this passage of this bill, because of what happened in Texas. It will we'll move some of it into the days ahead this week on the broadcast, maybe even later this hour. We'll see how things go, as I would have loved to have opened the phones to you on that to check in after some harrowing days of late. Our phone number, if you want to write it down, don't know that I'll have time for it, is 818-985-5735, if you want to try your luck, but we will see what we can get to. In fact, though we are a nationally focused show, they're in nationally syndicated, there is a lot right here in California that we will need to find at least a bit of time for, if only because what happens here in California is often a harbinger for the nation. For example, as the LA Times is reporting today, the federal safety net healthcare system for low-income and disabled Americans, Medicaid, will not be the only medical coverage devastated by the package of spending cuts and tax breaks that were signed into law by President Trump on the 4th of July. Covered Californians, that's the state's Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, the Covered California Health Insurance Marketplace estimates that as many as 660,000 of the roughly 2 million people in the program here will either be stripped of coverage or they will be forced to drop out due to increased costs and the onerous new mandates to stay enrolled in the system. Those who do stay could be hit with an average monthly premium increase of up to 66%. That, as the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has conservatively determined that the law signed by Trump and celebrated by congressional Republicans on Friday will in fact lead to nearly 12 million more people going without health insurance nationwide over the next decade. Other estimates are as high as 20 million people, and they don't even include $500 billion in mandatory cuts to Medicare, not Medicaid, but Medicare. $500 billion in mandatory cuts that, thanks to the fact that the Republican budget bill's increase of the national debt means that, according to a federal law known as PAYGO, Medicare must be trimmed by $500 billion over the next 10 years, beginning with $50 billion in cuts over the next year, which, by the way, the next fiscal year begins in October of this year. Cuts to Medicare, unless Congress passes another law to fix that little problem. Didn't get much coverage or debate while the bill was being debated for some reason. As to the cuts to health care next year for millions here in California who purchased insurance via Covered California, one of the best and most generous Obamacare exchanges in the nation, well, costs, if they're likely to go up for Californians, they are likely to go up for everybody in the country. And if California can't prevent that from happening, I am very worried for everyone else around the country today in every other state where things are likely going to get even worse. One rural clinic in Nebraska has already announced that it is closing due to the cuts to Medicaid in Donald Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill, which means it's not so beautiful for those relying on that clinic for health care, whether they are on Medicaid, on Medicare, or anything else. According to KLKN in Lincoln, Nebraska, the day before the Independence Day holiday and the day that Trump signed his MAGA murder bill, a clinic in southwest Nebraska announced that it is closing due to financial challenges, including anticipated Medicaid cuts. McCook-based Community Hospital said it is shutting down its clinic in Curtis, Nebraska, a town of about 900 people. The Curtis Medical Center has been in operation for more than 30 years. Quote, "Unfortunately, the current financial environment, driven by anticipated federal budget cuts to Medicaid, has made it impossible for us to continue operating our services." That, according to Community Hospital CEO Troy Brunts in a statement last week, the clinic will wind down its services over the coming months. The Nebraska Hospital Association has been pushing back against the Medicaid cuts in the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill. But apparently to little avail, as the closures are already beginning, and now the bill has been signed by your president, Donald Trump. Rural hospitals have said that they would be most affected and maybe forced to cut services or close altogether. And now we are seeing the first one doing exactly that. Hospital closures are hardly the only dangers, however, now being faced by Americans, thanks to Trump and Republicans who really do seem to hate Americans. At least if you take Donald Trump's word for it, he said as much at a rally last week, said that he hates at least half of Americans. President of the United States. Meanwhile, back here in the Golden State, just months after January wildfires amid record windstorms and exceedingly dry conditions caused an unprecedented level of destruction, killing at least 30 people, destroying more than 16,000 homes in L.A. County, and leaving a burn zone that is 2.5 times the size of Manhattan. Well, here we are now, 2 weeks into peak fire season, and wildfires are now spreading in California, kicking off, as the LA Times reported today, with a, quote, blazing bang, with more than a dozen fires breaking out across the entire state, southern, central, and northern California alike over the holiday weekend, setting the stage for what is to come over the next few months as the state moves from an unusually dry winter and spring into what is expected to be a hot summer and fall. That forecast comes as the Trump administration is enacting massive budget cuts, layoffs, office closures, and restructuring at the U.S. Forest Service, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, and at FEMA. And I want you to keep this in mind, because when fires rage out of control again, and they will here in California, but when Donald Trump starts up with his nonsense about California bringing this on themselves, not sweeping its forest floors or whatever nonsense he has, please remember this. The federal government owns and controls far more forest land here in the state of California than the state of California does. They have control of the federal government has control of nearly 60% of the state's nearly 33 million acres of forest. The state, on the other hand, controls just 3% of the forest out here, even as Trump has been gutting the U.S. Forest Service, including those who might have been tasked with sweeping the state's forest floors.
And remember, he's also taking the National Guard out of service. That would be helping people to evacuate.
Correct.
Or to deal with these emergencies.
Correct. The people who would be helping to fight the fires, the National Guard, in various ways. He's commandeered them for use in mass immigration roundups. Members who would otherwise be available to help fight these wildfires. It's a recipe for disaster that lies ahead. Because Donald Trump is not sweeping the forest floors. He's doing the opposite. He's pulling out staffers. Please, please remember that when the worst of these wildfires break out this season and when he then tries to blame the state for it. So it's a recipe for disaster that lies ahead right now, and a recipe for Trump to lie about it all. Remember that we told you so in advance, because after this past weekend, there are a lot of folks out there, particularly in Texas today, who are trying to desperately rewrite facts and rewrite history amid death and destruction in order to save themselves politically. But we'll get to that in a moment. Among the things in Trump and the Republican Party's big billionaire bonanza bill signed at the White House on the 4th of July, among the things that has received a lot less attention than the cuts to health care are these enormous slashes to green energy and environmental issues, which largely gut much of Joe Biden and the Democrats' landmark climate and clean renewable energy initiatives from the Inflation Reduction Act. Initiatives that had resulted in a manufacturing boom in the U.S. with its tax credits for building new clean energy factories and facilities, and tax credits to homeowners for installing things like solar panels on their homes or purchasing electric vehicles. It was all a raging success by pretty much everyone's opinion, except for Donald Trump. Actually, he knows it was a success. That's why he has to kill it, because he didn't come up with it, and you therefore have to pay the price. Among the initiatives that had been working on many levels from the Biden era, but now slashed by Trump and Republicans in their so-called big, beautiful bill, cuts that did not get enough coverage during the debate on the bill, but in the green energy and environmental space, just to name a few of these, a provision to reduce diesel emissions in the Inflation Reduction Act. Those funds are now rescinded by the new law. Similarly, federal spending from Biden's IRA on climate change action plans for state, local, and tribal governments is now shut down. I hope the folks down in Texas don't soon miss that more than they likely already are today. Funding for carbon footprint labeling for construction materials is now cut. Funding to curb air pollution, including for schools, which saved billions in healthcare costs, that is now cut in the new Republican law. Tax deductions for energy-efficient commercial buildings is now cut, meaning more energy will be used, which will mean that your energy prices are about to go up. Spending on the Green and Resilient Retrofit Program, that is being rescinded, along with funding related to greenhouse gases, environmental reviews, low-emissions electricity, data collection, and hydrofluorocarbons. Sustainable aviation, environmental and climate justice block grants all cut. Inflation Reduction Act funding that helps states and localities adopt zero-emission vehicles, that is now cut, along with special tax treatment for certain clean energy projects, because who needs clean energy projects? Green federal buildings will no longer be required moving forward. Let the waste and fraud and fossil fuel abuse continue there instead, according to the Trump administration and the Republican Party.
Effectively, it makes America polluted again, it makes Americans sicker, and it makes our energy more expensive, and it makes climate change impacts as horrific as possible. It will be very difficult to counter all of the changes, all of the rollbacks in the progress that we were making as a country to cleaning up our air and water and addressing climate change, which is, you know, behind the driving force behind these extreme and intense weather disasters happening more frequently.
Well, why worry about that? It's not like they're actually having an effect in every state in the union. Trump's bill also has cut nearly $1.5 billion in low carbon transportation material grants. That's rescinded. Let's see, $5.5 billion in energy efficient tax credits for new homes has been cut. $7.5 billion in rebates for purchasing clean vehicles cut. Energy-efficient home improvement credits cut to the tune of $21 billion that will go instead, to the ICE Army. The clean electricity production tax credit will be phased down and eventually out for low-emissions electricity sources like wind, solar, nuclear, and geothermal power. residential clean energy tax credit for rooftop solar, geothermal heat pumps, and other home devices will be cut by the end of this year, $77 billion worth.
In other words, if you are planning on getting one of these clean energy incentives for your home, you have to do it now because those tax credits and those incentives go away at the end of this year.
They do indeed. And then the phase down and eventual full phase out of clean energy electricity investment credits, slashing tax credits for investments in zero emissions electricity sources to the tune of $179 billion that had been allocated to that. Promising to all but kill our nation's historic investments in wind and solar projects at this point that were enacted by Democrats during the Biden administration while leaving in place billions of dollars of permanent incentives for the oil, the coal, and the gas industries whose products are quickly worsening our climate crisis. It is no longer a debate. This is done. Now, you may be happy it's done. You may want a more polluted future and a more polluted, dangerous climate in the future. But these are the facts. And whether you like Democrats, whether you like Republicans, the facts are Democrats and Joe Biden, without one single Republican vote, passed all of those measures, landmark measures, for a cleaner, less polluted, less harsh, less deadly climate. That's what the Democrats and Joe Biden did. Donald Trump and the Republicans, without a single Democratic vote, have taken all of that away, have rolled that all back, have said, we don't need that. We like the way the climate is going. We like everything that's happening out there. We like the floods. We like the hurricanes. We like the storms, the droughts, the wildfires. They have nothing to do with climate change. They're just life. Sure, they're getting worse and worse and worse and more deadly each and every year, but that's just, oh, I don't know, coincidence. Which brings us quite directly, in fact, as I see it, to the ongoing tragic disaster out of the state of Texas over the weekend and into today and this week. This tragedy that was unfolding even as Donald Trump and the Republicans were backslapping each other at the White House last week for gutting health care, for gutting food assistance. And the gutting the landmark effort to build a better, cleaner future to at least slow down, to at least try and slow down the ever-increasing and increasingly deadly and hot ravages of our fossil fuel-powered climate crisis, which yet again has reared its very ugly, tragic, if entirely predictable head in the state of Texas over the weekend, as we will discuss and try to make some sense of with Texas native and climate change expert Desi Doyen, who has been, well, frankly, predicting and warning us for years about all of this. After we take a quick break here on the broadcast, I'm Brad Friedman with, more breaking news out of Texas. We will get to that in a moment. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and the Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain. You're gonna fall.
It is indeed. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Crews were continuing to pick through mountains of debris and wading into swollen rivers on Monday in the search for victims of catastrophic flooding that killed, well, according to the headlines just minutes ago, at least 100 now dead in Texas. The total still unknown, the number of missing still unknown. This over the 4th of July weekend in Texas's Hill Country, including more than two dozen campers killed and counselors from a 100-year-old all-girls Christian camp on the banks of the Guadalupe River. With additional rain now on the way, more flooding still threatened in saturated parts of central Texas. Authorities, according to the AP, said the death toll was sure to continue to rise as crews looked for many people who were missing after water on the Guadalupe River reportedly rose some 25 feet in less than an hour. Authorities with 27 dead now accounted for from Camp Mystic, that girls' camp, Christian girls' camp on the river. 10 girls and a counselor from that camp remain missing. The raging flash floods slammed into riverside camps and homes before daybreak on Friday, pulling sleeping people out of their cabins, tents, and trailers, dragging them for miles past floating tree trunks and automobiles. Some survivors were found clinging to trees, clinging for their lives. Piles of twisted trees sprinkled with mattresses and refrigerators and coolers and canoes now litter the riverbanks. Authorities, including Texas Governor Greg Abbott, vowed that one of the next steps will be investigating whether enough warnings were issued and why some camps did not evacuate or move to higher ground in areas long vulnerable to flooding. In their conversation, of course, while lauding Donald Trump's leadership somehow, despite his gutting of the National Weather Service, few Texas state or county officials dared mention the C word, climate change, despite its very clear footprint in this record-breaking storm, with Greg Abbott vowing now, after the damage is done, to, he will do anything, unlimited money, in order to help Texans.
This will ensure all the counties are going to have access to every tool, strategy, personnel that the state of Texas can provide to them, which will be limitless. We'll put in everything we have. Most importantly, we will stop at nothing to ensure that every asset and person and plane and whatever is needed is going to be involved in the process of rescuing every last person and ensure everybody involved in this is going to be fully accounted for.
Well, that's great. That's great. The resources are limitless to help find the people after they have already been struck by disaster. Limitless. We have plenty of money to find the dead people, to find the survivors clinging to the trees after the disaster has happened. But not before. Not when something could have been done about it. On Thursday, the day before the flooding, on Friday, by the way, the National Weather Service first issued an advisory and then sent out a series of flash flood warnings in the early hours of Friday before issuing flash flood emergency warnings, which is a very rare step to alert the public to imminent danger. More on all of that in a moment. President Donald Trump signed a major disaster declaration for Kerr County, said he would likely visit on Friday, but he said it wasn't time to talk about whether he was still planning to phase out the Federal Emergency Management Agency entirely, and he added that he doesn't plan to rehire any of the federal meteorologists who were fired this year as part of his widespread government spending cuts. Quote, "This was a thing that happened in seconds. Nobody expected it," the president lied. Of course, like many of you who do pay attention to these things, I suspect, when I heard this horrific news, I gotta say the first thing that I wondered was whether the lack of warnings that were said to have actually reached people, if they had anything to do with the layoffs and the subsequent staffing shortages at the National Weather Service bureaus around the nation, as Trump has been, firing workers, buying them out, early retirements, all of that. Well, to answer that, it's a little bit nuanced, but according to experts in the New York Times, crucial positions at the local offices of the National Weather Service were unfilled as severe rainfall inundated parts of Central Texas on Friday morning, prompting some experts to question whether staffing shortages made it harder for the forecasting agency to coordinate with local emergency managers as flood waters rose. Texas officials appeared to blame the Weather Service for issuing forecasts on Wednesday that underestimated how much rain was coming, but former Weather Service officials said the forecasts were as good as could be expected. The staffing shortages, rather, suggested a different problem, those former officials said. The loss of experienced people who would typically have helped communicate with local authorities in the hours after flash flood warnings were issued in advance of the flooding. Separate questions have emerged about the preparedness of local communities, including Kerr County's apparent lack of a local flood warning system. The county, roughly 50 miles northwest of San Antonio, is where many of the deaths occurred. Despite a long history of this very type of flash flooding in the area, the county did not have a warning system like a siren for tornadoes elsewhere in the country because such systems are expensive and, well, it's Texas, you know, so they don't like raising taxes to pay for such things until after emergencies. Then the funding, apparently, according to the governor, becomes limitless. But before, to keep them safe in advance, well, we don't have the money for that. Apparently, Texas would rather simply have people die. Quote, taxpayers won't pay for it, said Kerry County Judge Rob Kelly, asked if people might reconsider in light of the catastrophe. He said, I don't know. The National Weather Service's San Angelo office, which is responsible for some of the areas hit hardest by Friday's flooding, was missing a senior hydrologist. Those are people who understand water and rivers and how quickly they can rise. It was missing a staff forecaster and a meteorologist in charge, according to union officials. The Weather Service's nearby San Antonio office, which covers other areas hit by the floods, also had significant vacancies, including a warning coordination meteorologist and senior and science officer. Because who needs science? Staff members in those positions are meant to work with local emergency managers to plan for floods, including when and how to warn local residents and to help them evacuate. Along with Trump layoffs, buyouts, and early retirement packages at both offices, the vacancy rate is roughly double what it was when Donald Trump returned to the White House in January. In less than 6 months, the vacancy rate of people who might have been able to help save hundreds of people's lives in Texas is now double what it was when Trump took office. Despite blame apparently assigned to the National Weather Service by Texas officials like Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, experts suggest the meteorologists got it right, even if the warnings and preparedness were hamstrung by the vacancies at the Weather Service. Desi Doyen is our broadcast producer and the managing editor of our twice-weekly Green News Reports, which focuses on climate and the environment, connecting the climate change dots over your public airwaves, which we have been doing now for more than 15 years, although apparently Greg Abbott didn't bother to listen, or if he did, he pretended not to know. Anyway, she has been digging into much of this with a whole bunch of academics and meteorological experts over the weekend. Desi Doyen, got any clarity after spending that time over a holiday weekend for us in this horrible, if totally foreseeable, tragedy, even as it continues to unfold with, more flooding now threatening your old home state of Texas and, by the way, in North Carolina on Monday.
Oh, yes, that's right. Tropical storm Chantal made landfall in North Carolina and dumped 10 inches of rain there. So, yes, these rain bombs happen all the time in Texas. What happened, though, was not related to a hurricane, although it was fed by Tropical Storm Barry, which had hit the Mexico coast, sort of the Yucatan Peninsula.
Which
area.
Is to say, it was related to that hurricane because after those hurricane or the tropical storm came ashore, picking up tons of moisture from the Gulf and the Pacific, that got to go somewhere.
Yes. So all that rain did feed into the storm that hit Central Texas and the Hill Country. Now, there's a lot of misinformation and inaccuracy that has been just promulgated over the last several days. So hopefully we can make it clear what actually happened.
Oh, good.
And help listeners in other states sort of be aware of how emergency preparedness works and how it doesn't work.
Right.
So to be clear, the rain is ongoing in the Hill Country right now. There were new flash floods on Sunday. This is a very long-lived, stalled storm over the area. And as we go to air, Central Texas is still under a flash flood watch. That's how bad this storm is. Now, the storm on Friday was...
which, by the way, means that emergency workers who are combing the banks of these rivers are themselves in danger if we see more flooding like we saw on Friday.
This is true. So what is confirmed is that there was a huge rain bomb, and this was a worst-case scenario for this particular area. It's literally the worst place to have this kind of storm drop ungodly amounts of rain. I mean, it was a stalled storm over a region with a history of flash floods. Now, a 10 to 15 mile shift in geography, east or west, would have made a big difference in how the rainfall and the flash floods actually went and unfolded. Where it was over the Guadalupe River, the headwaters of the Guadalupe River, that is the problem, because that's an area that is particularly steep and particularly vulnerable. Texas also is mostly limestone with a very thin layer of topsoil, so there's really nowhere for the water to be absorbed. It just runs off, and it runs off fast.
But let me say, these things are known. They are known by professional meteorologists, geologists in the area, science officers. They know this is hill country, this happens, and they also know that it is happening more and more and more frequently.
Well, and also there are other additional parts that made this the worst case scenario for which the state was not prepared. It happened overnight when people were sleeping. There was Texas just simply does not have a robust warning system for this kind of disaster, for flooding. And it happened in a rural area that had limited cell coverage. So I think there are three aspects of looking at this disaster. It was the forecasts, it was the communication of the forecasts and the alerts, and it was emergency preparedness. Now, the National Weather Forecast's alerts, as you mentioned, pretty much all the meteorologists say that they were accurate and timely, but communicating and disseminating those warnings in the middle of the night was where the system fell apart.
And yet, let me stop you again there, because you had Texas officials going out and saying, well, the Weather Service, they got it wrong. They disappointed us. They didn't come up with what we, you know, we just had no way of knowing this kind of storm was going to happen. They did have a way of knowing. They did know. They were told. These were communicated.
Yes, they did. And so the Texas tragedy, it raises alarms for disaster readiness across this country. I mean, we are simply not prepared as a nation for more frequent, intense, extreme weather disasters from man-made climate change. We just aren't. And that's the stuff that the Trump administration and Republicans together have gutted those funds that were supposed to help communities prepare and be more resilient for these kinds of weather disasters as much as they could. So let's be clear about what happened. On Wednesday, as you mentioned, National Weather Service sent out the first alert and began warning people that flash flood conditions were brewing. On Thursday afternoon at 1 p.m., 12 hours before their dangerous alert and the floods began, the National Weather Service sent another alert, and it included keywords that automatically trigger cell phone alerts. Now, some people did evacuate. There were camps. There was the Mo Ranch camp in Hunt, Texas. They saw the alerts. They were hosting a huge conference with hundreds of teenagers, and they said, let's get out.
So when they say no one could have predicted this, that's
some people,
a lie, because they did predict it, and they heard it. Some people heard it and left. And by the way, let me just, I want you to keep going here, but let me also underscore radio. Radio, when you talk about warning systems, local radio used to be very crucial to emergencies. And, you know, with the emergency broadcast system and local coverage, telling people to get out of very specific areas. Well, all of those stations, by and large, have been bought up by huge corporations, and they run them from somewhere else in the country. They have no idea what is going on locally on the ground, so they don't even have radios to turn on anymore that would, you know, you might hear, hey, get the hell out. There's a wall of water that is 25 feet coming your direction.
Yeah. Now, we also have to be clear, though, that this was overnight. So there are other aspects of a robust emergency warning system that they could have had in place, but they didn't. So as of 6 p.m. Thursday, the National Weather Service again warned that flash floods were likely, with rainfall rates higher than 3 inches an hour, which is definitely a flash flood maker. And at 1 a.m. is when they really began issuing the more urgent flash flood warnings. At 4 a.m., they issued another urgent warning of catastrophic damage and severe threat to human life, again with key words to help trigger those cell phone warnings. But of course, like you say, overnight, people were sleeping. It's a rural area with low cell signal, so it really is unclear at this time how many people received those warnings. And if they had their cell phones turned off, well, you know, that's even worse. Mm-hmm. In some of these camps, the children were not allowed to have their cell phones, so they didn't get those warnings. Now, it seems to me that the officials,
yeah,
especially the local officials, were complacent. The city manager of Kerrville, he, in several press conferences, mentioned that he was out jogging at 3:30 in the morning. He checked the river level at that time before the rain had started,
right,
but after the National Weather Service alert had gone out, and he didn't see any flooding, so he was like, okay, not that big of a deal, apparently. He then returned at 4:30 a.m. and said he saw the water rising so fast that he and his co-workers were almost trapped.
And that is one of the points from that New York Times article where the people that, you know, at the National Weather Service, the meteorologists, that they got it right, but the absence, the firings or the, you know, early retirements, layout, whatever they call those, that the Trump administration has done with workers at the National Weather Service means that the people specifically who might talk to that judge and say, here's what's going on, don't be fooled if you don't see any water at 3:30 because it's coming by 4:30.
Yeah.
That those people who would reach out to the community officials like that, those are the people who were gone.
Right.
And Donald Trump says he has no intention of hiring them back, by the way.
Now, another thing, the Texas Tribune reports that the public in Texas apparently has also become desensitized because they get so many of these cell phone emergency alerts.
Yeah.
Texas state officials, they really appear to overuse their cell phone emergency alert system. They get weather alerts and amber alerts and silver alerts, but also Texas sends out what are called blue alerts.
What's
about
a blue alert?
Police officers who are in danger. And the they'll sometimes send those out overnight. So you'll get a police officer has been, you know,
has been shot in the line of duty in the middle of the night.
Yes. And so apparently that was so many alerts that were issued overnight that the FCC got 4,000 complaints from Texas residents saying, please, you've got to figure out a way for us to not be alerted by things that we don't need to be concerned about, because I'm at home in bed. Why do I need to hear about this police officer on the other side of the state? So that, of course.
So instead of rolling those back, instead of using different channels, for example, so that you might be able to sign up, oh, I'd like to hear about the amber alerts and the silver alerts, maybe not the blue alerts, but I definitely want to hear about the weather alerts. Instead of doing that, people just turn off their alerts entirely.
Right. So that's
when they keep coming in like that.
That's another problem with them not having a robust system. So now the blame game, as you mentioned, started immediately. Texas officials are now facing extreme scrutiny over their response to these floods. But, you know, at that first press conference that they held after the floods on July 4th on that evening, both Texas and federal officials like Department of Health Homeland Security, Christy Noem. Yeah, so she tried to actually blame National Weather Service forecasters. Now, Wendell, can you get ready with clip one? So this is Kerr County's top elected official, County Judge Rob Kelly.
Mm-hmm. We knew there was going to be a problem. Why weren't these camps evacuated?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Well, you're the judge. I mean, you're the top official here in this county. Why can't you answer that? There are kids missing. These camps were in harm's way. We knew this flood was coming.
We didn't know this flood was coming. Rest assured, no one knew this kind of flood was coming. We have floods all the time. This is the most dangerous river valley in the United States.
I agree.
And we deal with floods on a regular basis. When it rains, we get water. We had no reason to believe that this was going to be anything like what's happened here. None whatsoever.
Now, they kind of actually did have reason to believe, because the National Weather Service was yelling and screaming at them, hey, this is going to get much worse.
And by the way, did you hear during that clip, you could hear someone's emergency alert going off in the background?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So we know the system worked. Now, the other thing that really struck me about this is what the complacency, again, of these officials. I mean, if you know that you're in flash flood alley, if you know you are in the most vulnerable region for flash floods in the country, as he said, then you really can't use that as an excuse to not prepare or to not heed those warnings.
And when you hear that the judge in down in Texas, they call the city essentially
the county official, the top
we call it executive elsewhere, whatever. They call it judge down there. He says, "Well, no, we had no idea this type of storm was going to come." He's in hill country. He's oversees the Guadalupe, where they have these kinds of floods all the time, if not 25 feet in an hour. How about if it had been half that? Had it only rose 10 feet in an hour, would that have been okay? The idea that we had no idea it was going to be this bad.
You kind of should.
What if it had been half as bad? That still would have been bad. That still would have killed dozens of people. And yet, it seems like local county officials did nothing, knowing they've got, you know, hundreds of little girls sleeping on the banks of the river.
Now, one of the things that they said was that they also have to be careful about when they issue these alerts. And there is an issue with that. It is true, because in the hill country, there are lots of low water crossings. So if you issue an alert and they're afraid that, oh, you know, maybe they'll get, cry wolf.
Yeah.
If it doesn't get as bad as they think it will. So they held off, as one of the emergency managers mentioned, they held off on giving that alert because, oh, you know, we don't want people to become complacent.
Uh-huh.
And then they also wanted to be careful about timing it correctly so that folks wouldn't get caught in these low water crossings. And I can totally understand the difficulty of trying to evacuate hundreds of people, but that's why you're supposed to start much earlier before the disaster actually hits. Now, DH Secretary Christy Noem also tried to blame what she called antiquated technology at the National Weather Service when she was trying to
blame.
The hell is
she talking about?
Nobody knows what she's talking about, because there are no major planned upgrades that the Trump administration was planning to do for the National Weather Service technology. In fact, they're planning to cut the science agency personnel.
Christy Noem is getting her excuses confused. She meant to use that one for FAA disasters, National Weather Service disasters. She's got to figure out someone else to blame that is not her to distract from the fact that they are cutting all of the newer technology. They are cutting the funding for those sorts of things that might improve all of these situations. They're cutting the expertise, the people who know, how to help in these situations. And so she's just, on FCC radio, I'll just say she's making crap up.
Another problem is, meteorologists all say that the National Weather Service's forecasting technology is as advanced as it can be right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most advanced in the world, right up there with other top-level science agencies. And They also note that no one can predict exact rainfall totals over a small geographic area more than 6 hours out. So that's why when they did get the information that they needed that showed them how dangerous this storm was going to be, that's when they sent it out. And unfortunately, it didn't get to the people who needed to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you discussed the impact of the Trump administration cuts and the DOGE cuts to the National Weather Service and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, again, meteorologists are saying that staffing in those offices was not the issue, that they actually, the Central Texas National Weather Service had placed extra staff members because they saw the storm was coming.
On the prediction side, we're talking about on the forecast side. Right. Not necessarily the communication side.
Correct. Yeah. So they had placed extra forecasters mm-hmm. on staff during those storms, and they succeeded in their job in delivering those accurate and timely alerts. But unfortunately, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said today in the White House that she felt that they were overstaffed, that they had too many people on hand, when, of course, as you mentioned, the key roles are empty.
Said that? Who said we have too many people?
White House Press Secretary Caroline
Leavitt.
Caroline
Leavitt said we had too many people.
Overstaffed, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so, of course, they don't understand, I guess, how emergency management works. It's not just the forecasters. You also need the staff to disseminate the communication and coordinate with local officials.
Overstaffed. Let me note that there are 600 empty positions. 600 people have left the National Weather Service since Donald Trump became president again at the beginning of the year. 600 people are now missing from our National Weather Service that might have helped not only predict this storm, as they did predict, but then also notify the community that they had to take action on it. 600 people. Other than that, Press Secretary Barbie, they're totally overstaffed at the National Weather Service.
Well, and there's also this other fun fact, you know, Kristi Noem and Donald Trump want to eliminate FEMA and leave the states to fend for themselves, even though already states are in charge of FEMA, of their disaster response, and they only request help from FEMA when they need it. So the Trump administration, Kristi Noem, all those guys have been basically lying about the structure of FEMA, saying, now states will be in charge of it. They've always been in charge of it. All they're talking about is cutting the funding and forcing states to bear more of the burden, which is a somewhat impossible task when you are in the middle of a major disaster and you're trying to recover hundreds of people who are missing and dying, that it's a really bad time to say, okay, let's go ahead and try to find the money to pay for all of this stuff that we have to do right now on an emergency basis.
When, again, the state itself said, no, we don't want to set up emergency systems. We don't want to set off alarms sirens, tornado sirens and so forth along the bank of the Guadalupe, even though we know that it floods, even though we know this has happened historically for years. It's getting more and more frequent. It's getting more and more intense and yet too expensive to set up those alarms.
Yeah. And so about that siren system, there was talk in Kerr County, which is where the worst of the impacts were felt. Over the several years, they've been talking about installing the kind of flood siren warning system that people are familiar with on tornadoes.
Right.
Other river systems in Texas also have a siren warning system. That area of the Guadalupe River did not have one. And in other areas of the state, apparently the river siren warning systems are really old and some of them are no longer functioning.
And so this was a county decision to not build those alarms?
So Kerr County Judge Rob Kelly, the one we heard from earlier, he said that before he was elected to office, the county considered putting in a flood warning system along that stretch of river that would have functioned like a tornado warning siren, but the idea was never implemented because of the expense. He said the public reeled at the cost, which is understandable because it would have fallen entirely on local taxpayers.
Exactly. Where's the state? Where's Greg Abbott? Well, where's Dan Patrick? They sure got plenty of money for cops all over the state. They got plenty of money to send the state militia down to guard the border, but they don't have enough to guard enough money to guard their own residents in their own states on their own rivers. No, leave it up to the counties. If they don't want it, if they die, oh well.
As of the three times that Kerr County tried to discuss this, 2016, in 2018, they were denied a state grant funding to build that kind of system. They tried to do it again in 2021. The Texas Tribune reports that regarding the state-level response, in April of this year, Texas state lawmakers voted down a bill to fund improvements to local flood warning systems across the state because the cost was going to be too much.
And God forbid they should raise taxes to keep people alive.
And now at least two lawmakers who voted against it say that they would have voted for it, especially one who the state assembly who represents that particular district where Kerrville is located. He said that he now understands the way that emergency management works and how that would have been really
helpful. Had he only known they would have taken out. I mean, we have heard this since this disaster in Texas. We have heard this from, you know, the governor, from the county officials, state officials, local officials. Oh, if we had any idea. Nobody had any idea. They all had the idea. They have all been warned. They were warned about this storm. They have been warned about climate change and the increased frequency of these storms, the increased intensity of these storms. They have known about it for years. They have chosen to do nothing. They have chosen to pretend it does not exist. That is exactly what they just did in Washington, D.C. on Friday, on the same day that this storm struck, when Donald Trump signed this bill that guts hundreds of billions of dollars that was meant to deal with problems exactly like this.
Yes. And also, just want to make clear, this was climate change. As the world warms, extreme rainfall events are becoming even more intense. Massive rain bombs like the one that hit Texas are becoming more frequent, more intense around the whole planet because of the burning of fossil fuels, which heats the planet, a warmer atmosphere absorbs more moisture, which leaves more moisture to dump, and especially it's causing storms to stall, also leading to more dumping of rainfall. And in Texas alone, rainfall intensity has increased overall by 20% since 1990.
Oh, who knew? Who knew? Who could have predicted it?
Well, the climate scientists did.
Correct. And we have been reporting on what the climate scientists have predicted for decades now. And so to hear people say, we didn't know, we had no idea, had we only known, we would have taken action. Guess what? You all knew, and you all know now. Are you going to take action now, or are you going to pretend it's not a problem again and still? Are you going to support Donald Trump and the Republicans who just gutted the mechanisms to prevent what happened on Saturday from happening again, to prevent hundreds of little girls from being threatened by completely predictable disasters that could be acted upon in advance? Are you going to still support those people who don't give a damn if you die? I guess we'll find out in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead. Until then, we got to get out. Thanks again, Desi Doyen, our producer.
Yep.
Thanks to our board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's Grimm Show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. You can drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast at bradblog.com. On the social medias, particularly Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. Always good to hear from you there. You can talk to Desi. She is Green News Report on the social medias. We'll see you there until we see you here. Hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.